The Large Nerdron Collider podcast is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Large Nerdron Collider podcast, the podcast that's all about the geeky things happening in the world around us and how very excited we are about them. I'm Ariel Kasten, and with me, as always, is snowing and blowing Jonathan Strickland.
My bells are jingling.
I like how that's like a tie back to an earlier episode from this month where you were a jingle jangle with the cowboy hat.
Yes. It's almost like we didn't record that a couple of days earlier. Hey, Ariel, I got a question for you. Okay, Ariel, here's your question. What is a geeky present that you have received for the holidays in the past? Doesn't have to be the geekiest, just one that stands out in your mind. And can you tell us about it?
Yes, I've received a lot of geeky presents, obvi.
Yeah, you have a Kermit the Frog t-shirt that I think is pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. I'm working to lose weight so I can wear it again. I'm just going with the first one that comes to mind.
Is
I got some cookie stamps, and one of them has a skull and crossbones, and it says not poison. And I don't know, it's geeky. I'm a baking geek, so, you know, I am a nerd, if you want to go that way. Like, recently I got Jumanji for Christmas, and that was awesome, like on DVD, just in case it's ever not available on streaming, the new one. But yeah, no, I'm a baking nerd, and just having a not poison cookie stamp has come in so useful for so many of like my geeky endeavors. Like I've made not poison cookies for tabletop games when we visited a bakery, and I've made not poison cookies for my LARP. And like, yeah, so you wouldn't think necessarily that a baking tool would be geeky, but it totally is. Hence my rambling about it. Anyhow, Jonathan, what's a geeky present that you've received?
Like you, Ariel, I have received more than my share of geeky presents. I'm sitting in a room where I've got a bunch of them surrounding me, in fact. Like, I have Minecraft-style torches that are mounted on the wall behind me that were a present. But the one that I think stands out in my mind, because it was, you know, a pretty expensive present for the time, it still is, really, was a Mace Windu lightsaber. And this was when they were first starting to make those lightsabers that had the fluorescent tube where it lights up the way you would see a lightsaber extend in the movies. And it had all the sound effects and everything, and had the collision detection so that when it hit something, it would make the shh noise, you know, the lightsaber noises. And I just remember that being so awesome. Like, it was weird that I was given the purple Mace Windu lightsaber, because that's a real outlier. You know, it's unmistakably the Mace Windu lightsaber. And I'm surprised it wasn't either of the Luke lightsabers or even the Darth Vader one. But I really enjoy it. And I still have it. But yeah, that's one that stands out in my mind, because it was one of those toys where it's just like, when I was a kid, the toy lightsabers, you either had a hilt that kind of looked like one of the lightsabers, but that was it. It was just the hilt. So it was more of a costume piece. Or you had the plastic one that had the little, you know, segmented telescoping lightsaber, where it's like made out of that relatively soft plastic, but you didn't have anything like...
I was going to say, don't knock those little three extendy ones. They make such a satisfying thwonk when you hit somebody with them.
Oh, I have both hit people and been hit by those lightsabers. And of course, now you can do things like go to Disneyland or Disney World and go to the experience where you can build your own lightsaber and choose the hilt you want and the kind of color you want. And I felt a little bit of temptation to do that, but not enough to actually plop down the like $200 or so it costs to do it. Maybe when things are a little less pandemic-y, maybe I'll consider it. It's tough, because I think we've talked about this before. I've reached a point in my life where I don't really need more stuff. So I have to battle between my desire to indulge in my geeky love for things like lightsabers versus the practical need to not be buried under junk.
So I think one, we've had a few friends who have gotten lightsabers from like build your own lightsaber as a present from people. So someone knows, hey, you're going to Disney. Let me go ahead and gift you a lightsaber for while you're there. So I think that's a great way to do it because Disney's so expensive on its own. But what you can do with all of your lightsabers that you built, Jonathan, is you can line your ceiling with them and light up your room. Takes up no additional space.
I mean, it would, I wouldn't be opposed to it, but that's it for that question segment. And because this is a special episode, you know, we wanted to be able to take some time off for the holidays, but not go without episodes. Obviously we wanted episodes to go out. And so this is one of those special episodes where we have pre-recorded it. We're not going to talk about the news because that's not how news works. Yeah. And instead, the idea came up to talk about Christmas episodes of TV shows. So shows that are not, you know, these aren't like one-time like Christmas special type things like Charlie Brown, right? It's not that, or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Not that those aren't brilliant. Mm-hmm. We love them. But these are episodes, special episodes of series that otherwise are, about something else. And we wanted to talk about some of our choices.
Yeah. So I just want to start by saying when we agreed on this topic, and by the way, I know it's almost Christmas. So for anybody who celebrates, happy that time. When we first started talking about this, I was like, oh yeah, I love Christmas episodes of different TV shows. And that's true. But then I realized something that like, while I enjoy watching them while they happen, there are very few that I actually like go back and revisit every year. I kind of had to remind myself of a lot of them. And there are a lot that I like. But yeah, it's more of a, I enjoy the new surprise every year.
Agreed. There are a couple that are like, I think for a lot of these, the Christmas special, it's one of those things where you want to watch it in the context of the show, as opposed to watching it separate from its own, with a couple of exceptions. Like, I threw in the Goes Wrong show. For those who don't know what the Goes Wrong show is, it's from Mischief Theater. That's the theater group that created the play That Goes Wrong, as well as several other plays. And the whole premise is that it's a group of amateur drama society members who put on shows, but everything goes wrong because they're not terribly capable. Right. They make a lot of mistakes, both the people who are the actors and the stage crew. And of course, it's all very, very carefully designed and choreographed so that things go wrong when they need to go wrong. And that's a level of humor that really appeals to me. I mean, Ariel and I both have a history in theater. We've both been in shows where things have gone wrong.
Man, I have nightmares about stuff like the Goes Wrong show.
Yeah, you got to just be able to roll with it. Like, we've probably been in shows together where stuff has gone wrong, usually at a
certainly
pretty minor level, nothing like to a show-stopping level. But that's the whole gag with the Goes Wrong show, is that nothing stops the show. They live and breathe the show must go on ethic, even as the set may literally be burning down around them. And they've done a few different Christmas specials. They've done Peter Pan Goes Wrong, which is brilliant.
That is a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Which you don't think of Peter Pan as a Christmas thing, except that it's a frequent Christmas pantomime in England. So that's why they did that.
I think of Peter Pan as an every holiday story,
yes,
Jonathan.
I know you do. but they also do Christmas Carol Goes Wrong. And this past season, they opened with The Nativity Goes Wrong, which was pretty good.
That sounds special. It is really interesting because we all wrote down, me and Jonathan, we wrote down the episodes that do stand out to us. And you wrote down one, Jonathan, that I cannot stand.
What's that?
It's the Always Sunny in Philadelphia, A Very Sunny Christmas.
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, the claymation bit of it, it is the one with the claymation, correct?
Yeah.
It's so dark and so mean-spirited. Like, you don't like How I Met Your Mother. And I understand that Always Sunny is supposed to be dark and mean-spirited. It's kind of a parody or commentary on that kind of person, but it is just so dark that it just left me feeling icky.
I love that special so much. It is not safe for work. It's not for kids. It is dark. It is sophomoric. It's grotesque, and it's amazing, and I love it. Now that's coming from someone like I actually really like sweet and sentimental Christmas stuff. Like I am not, I'm not jaded and cynical where I only like, you know, the dark stuff or whatever, but I do really love that particular episode.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's okay. We can have differing opinions. You talked about sweet, and I think one of the Christmas specials that I do return to a lot, oddly enough, is the Golden Girls' "'Twas a Nightmare Before Christmas." Mm-hmm. It's just such a, it makes me feel so good leaving it. I don't know.
Can you give kind of like a quick sort of high level synopsis of what it's about?
I can. So it starts snowing in Florida, where the Golden Girls are set, even though they filmed in California.
Very unusual to snow in Florida.
None of the girls get to go do what they want to do. So they go out to a diner and there's this older dude who's running the diner and they chat with him and they watch the diner for him so he can go visit his family. And it's just, I don't know. It's a very simple premise, but it's absolutely delightful. You know, just seeing people selflessly help each other to make someone's day better is wonderful.
Well, and it's funny because we each have a Twilight Zone episode listed, although mine is the original Twilight Zone. It was remade for another version of Twilight Zone, but I was thinking specifically of the original run of Twilight Zone, the Rod Serling run of Twilight Zone, and you have a new Twilight Zone one, and I'm not familiar with The Traveler or A Traveler. Can you tell me what that is?
Yes. So A Traveler, it's the guy who played... the actor's name. He's the voice of Invincible.
Yuen. He was in Walking Dead, wasn't he?
Yes, Steven Yuen. Yes, he was. He plays, I mean, this is a huge spoiler because I'm just going to spoil the episode for you. He plays, oh no, I'm not. I'm going to do it the right way. Okay, so he plays a mysterious traveler who shows up at like an Alaskan Christmas party for like the police. There's some tension between like the Inuit people there and the Caucasian people there, I guess. It's not huge, but it's definitely there. And they lock this dude up in jail and like he makes friends with everybody. And then it turns out he's an alien and then there's an alien invasion. And like, I know that's dark. When I just said I really like uplifting Christmas specials, but it's, I don't know. I was able to anticipate it just enough and just not enough to make it a really fun Twilight Zone journey. That being said, I really do like Night of the Meek, which you also is the one that you said you like.
Yeah, and that one is very much not your typical Twilight Zone. It's not creepy or unsettling. It's very sweet. It's the story of a man who's down on his luck. He's playing essentially a store Santa, but he's depressed. He's having issues with alcoholism. And all he really wants to do is to be able to give people the things that they most need and most want. Like he wants that feeling of being able to make other people's days better. And he comes across a sack that manifests the things that people want, but otherwise wouldn't get. And he starts giving them out as gifts. And I don't want to say any more than that, other than it is incredibly earnest and sincere and corny. Like you could argue it's corny. I don't care about any of that. I love that episode. I love the really twisted, dark episodes of Twilight Zone too. I like the ones that have the morality tales, but this one is just, like I said, a very sincere and sweet episode. I'm not saying it's brilliant and like everything is telegraphed a billion miles ahead of it, but it's just a nice thing to watch.
Well, that's exactly it. It's delightful that Twilight Zone said, yeah, we usually make you feel a little creeped out. We're gonna be a little nice for once. Another one I want to mention, because, you know, speaking of Twilight Zone, a lot of sci-fi and comic and all that sort of genre have Christmas specials. But one of my favorite ones is not even for the story. It's Doctor Who's Last Christmas, because they cast Nick Frost as Santa Claus. And I love the meta for that. And he also does a really great job. I mean, the story's about, like, face-hugging crabs that suck your brains and make you dream bad, I think. But
your classic Doctor Who stuff.
Your classic Doctor Who stuff. So it's not, like, super happy, exception of Nick Frost, who makes an amazing Santa Claus. I was like, that's cute. And then he totally blew me away.
Well, I would love for us to continue. We've got a whole bunch more that we've written down, but we're starting to run low on time, and we want to come back and give a mashup that neither of us made, but someone, a beloved listener made. And we're going to share that with you when we come back after this break.
All right, so we're back, and we recently got a mashup from some of our listeners to do The Mandalorian mashed up with Santa Claus. And then our listener, Penny, thank you, Penny, a little peek behind the curtain, Penny is actually my niece, actually wrote a mashup for it, and it was so good that we decided our mashups couldn't be the same one. We had to instead mash Santa Claus up with other properties. But we also wanted to read hers on the air because she put a lot of effort into it, and it's absolutely charming. And it's called The Santalorian.
And we decided, like, how do you divide this up? I mean, how do you divide up a story that was written by someone? So what we've made, we made the executive decision that Ariel's going to be the narrator, and I will provide voices.
Yes. All right, for your listening pleasure, The Santalorian. It was 2 days before Christmas, and Mando Claus was checking on his elves to make sure everything was going all right. As he entered the workshop, the elves stopped what they were doing to look at him, all but one. But Mando took no notice. Mando Claus walked through, passing section by section, until he came to the end of the line. There, at that station, was an elf he'd never seen before. He was smaller than the others, and he had long, slender ears, and he was green. Mando Claus looked at the toy the elf was fixing, and he did a double take. The toy was floating in the air. The elf seemed to be doing nothing but raising his hands and making movements, and yet the repairs were happening. The elf's eyes were closed, so he didn't notice Mando Claus standing there.
"Hey,"
Mando Claus said.
"Elf."
The elf did not answer.
"Hey,"
Mando called more forcefully. The elf, startled, dropped the toy, shattering it. Because of all the commotion, the workshop went silent.
"Who are you?"
Mando Claus asked. Mando Claus watched as the elf made hand movements and gestures for over 10 minutes. He was able to deduce that the elf was not an elf, but his name was Baby Snoda. He was a very young fellow and needed to get back to his people, the Sledai. He explained that he was hiding from Moff Grinch, the man who wanted his force powers to ruin Christmas. Baby Snoda had ambushed another elf, stolen his clothes, and disguised himself as that elf. He had been using the Force to fix toys, hence the floating. Mando Claus was bewildered. This was weird. Suddenly, as if on cue, Moff Grinch burst into the workshop. He was a tall, green creature whose heart was 3 sizes too small, and he was wearing a black spacesuit and a black cape. He carried a 39.5-foot glowing pole.
"Give me the elf and no one gets hurt,"
sneered Moff Grinch.
"I don't think so, Moff. The kid stays with me,"
Mando Claus replied sarcastically, picking up Baby Snoda. He gave a signal, and all the other elves jumped up with toy swords and toy bows and arrows. They charged after Moff Grinch, fighting as hard as they could to protect their Santalorian. This gave Mando Claus and Baby Snoda a chance to escape. They climbed into Mando Claus' spaceship, the Polar Crest, and set a course for Tatooine, the Sledai's home planet, hoping to find one still there. They set the ship into hyperdrive and relaxed in the cockpit. While traveling, Baby Snoda became particularly interested in a small spherical ornament on the flight control stick. Mando Claus noticed his interest and gave it to the elf to play with, warning him not to eat it. But Baby Snoda put it in his pocket for safekeeping. Not long after, they arrived at Tatooine. As they were stepping out of the ship, they discovered they were in the middle of a skirmish. On one side, two outlaws. On the other side, two women, a Santalorian covered in Christmas bows, fighting alongside a marshal singing Christmas carols. Mandoclaws saw that they needed help, so he took his pistol and shot an outlaw, while Baby Snoda used the force to eliminate the other. The Santalorian and the marshal thanked them gratefully. The women explained that they came from Navarro. The carol-singing marshal said that her name was Carol Tunes, and the Santalorian was Christmas Bo-Katan. Mandoclaws explained their mission and asked if they knew anything of the Sled Eyes. Carol Tunes didn't, but Christmas Bo-Katan was aware of one that was being held captive on Tatooine on a docked Empire ship. The two women offered to help Mandoclaws on his quest. Because he didn't know the planet very well, Mandoclaws wholeheartedly accepted. The four set out to the valley. After traveling for an hour on foot, they came to the docked Empire ship. They took out two stormtroopers and snuck on board. They had to be careful that Baby Snoda made no noise because there were so many other stormtroopers on patrol. Christmas Bo-Katan led them to the dungeon where the Sled Eye Luke Snowcatcher was being held. When he saw them, he was surprised. Two Santalorians, a marshal, and a tiny elf had come to his rescue?
"Come here, little one,"
Luke said to Baby Snoda, recognizing him as his kind. Mandoclaws set Baby Snoda down, and Snoda walked cautiously towards Luke. Suddenly, Moff Grinch entered the dungeon to check on his prisoner. When he saw Baby Snoda, he immediately recognized him. He called his men together and told them to get the small elf.
"I have a plan. Cover me,"
Luke said to the trio as he turned to Baby Snoda. The trio fought as hard as they could, but the stormtroopers were too much for them.
"Fall back,"
Carol Tunes cried as the stormtroopers pushed them back to the cell. Moff Grinch was closing in on them. All of a sudden, a tiny spherical ornament flew across the room, hitting Moff Grinch right between the eyes.
"Ah!"
While he was recovering, this gave Luke and Baby Snoda the chance to use the force to wipe out the stormtroopers. Moff Grinch looked up to see his army defeated. Knowing that he was outnumbered, he fled. Everyone cheered! Moff Grinch's days of terrorizing Baby Snoda were over. Luke scooped up Baby Snoda and they headed back to the Polar Crest. Mandoclaws realized it was almost Christmas Eve. He needed to head home and finish getting everything ready. He was sad, though, to leave Baby Snoda. He liked the little guy. But Luke promised him that Baby Snoda would come to the workshop to help fix toys.
Baby Snoda is very good at fixing toys, even if his head and the toys are in the clouds,
Luke said, and everyone laughed.
Ho, ho, ho.
Mandoclaws, Christmas Bo-Katan, and Carol Tunes climbed back into the Polar Crest. They waved goodbye, and Mandoclaws was sure he saw Baby Snoda wave back.
Aww.
Aww, that was so good, Penny. We loved it.
Yes. Yes. I apologize for my performance. I'm a little rusty. In a while.
It was brilliant, Jonathan. It's brilliant.
You're too kind.
Brilliant.
I felt
award winning.
I felt my Carol Tunes was probably the hit of the show. But
I think it was spot on. So yes, thank you, Penny, for writing that mashup. To everybody else listening, if you've got a mashup you'd like to hear or you've got an idea for a mashup, write it and maybe we'll read it on the air as well.
Yes, and just because sometimes people tune out before the end. If you want to send us something, the best way to do that is by email. And the email address for the show is lnc@iheartmedia.com. Now, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to give you our mashups of taking a geeky property and finding out what happens when you add Santa to it. Okay, we are back. Ariel, who do you want to go first?
I'm going to let you go first because I just read a lot.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So what we are doing here is, as I said, we're introducing Santa Claus into some sort of geeky property that otherwise would not have Santa in it. Now, this actually gets a little tricky because a lot of geeky properties have done those little one-off Christmas specials where at least there's an implication that Santa Claus is there. So we had to pick something that had not been done. I picked Loki, as in the Disney Plus miniseries, which gets season 2 coming up. So this This episode, this very special Christmas episode of Loki, takes place between season one and season two. So if you haven't watched Loki, minor spoilers might be ahead. Here we go. Loki Odinson has a problem. He's stuck in an alternate time variance authority where no one seems to know who he is, and he just spent a whole season trying to suss out what was going on at the TVA in the first place. Plus, the holidays are around the corner. Maybe. It's hard to say. Time works differently at the TVA. Loki is thrilled that Mobius M. Mobius is alive and well, though somewhat irritated that Mobius has no memory of Loki. But he's determined to atone for his past, even if Mobius isn't really aware of that past and isn't really that keen on the whole thing in the first place. But Loki, in an attempt to explain who he is and where he is from, sparks something in Mobius. The revelation of the Loki variants catches Mobius's attention in particular. See, the TVA is still in charge of maintaining the timeline and making sure things don't get too chaotic. Loki, clearly, is an agent of chaos, and that means his variants are still a potential problem. It's not long before Mobius has picked out a splinter off of the timeline that looks like it might be an issue. Loki, still trying to explain things to Mobius, desperately tags along as they travel to this particular reality. "If you're coming with us, you need to put this on," says Mobius, shoving a pile of white clothing toward Loki. "It'll keep you out of sight." Loki smiles. "I assure you, I am quite able to keep out of sight." "Could have fooled me," says Mobius, and Loki scowls and he grabs the clothes. Soon, the TVA team assembles, all decked out in white winter gear. They open up a portal to the timeline. The team appear on an icy plain, with huge glaciers looming in the distance. "I know this place," says Loki. "We're on Jotunheim." And Mobius nods. "Land of the Frost Giants. Our variant was last detected here." Loki frowns. "I was born here. Well, not here, but my version of here is where I was born. Though, of course, I mostly destroyed my version of Jotunheim." And Mobius says, "I'm going to ignore that. We need to track this variant down." And they go, and they trek across a seemingly endless expanse of ice. But as they do so, way off in the distance, they spot the gleam of reflected light. Mobius gestures to the rest of his team, making lots of hand movements, and Loki, watching, waits and then says, "I don't understand what any of that was all about." Mobius sighs and looks at the ground and says, "Those are hand signals intended for silent communication with the team so that we don't alert the variant before we get there, but clearly that doesn't matter now because you're determined to give away our position." And Loki says, "Ah, I understand." And then after a moment, he gives a thumbs up. Mobius rolls his eyes so hard you can almost hear it, and the group slowly advances, and as they get closer, they see that the reflected light is coming from a fortress made from ice and snow. Mobius turns to the rest of the group and begins gesturing again, but as he does so, the huge doors to the fortress silently swing open, and Loki holds up a finger, stopping Mobius, and points, and Mobius turns around, sees the doors, and says, "Great, well, so much for the quiet way." The team moves in, tense. As they pass through the open gates, they hear a voice.
"Come forth and know me better, man," says the voice, followed by a chortle.
Mobius shares a bemused look with his team, and Loki shrugs, and they walk forward into the chamber, at the end of which is a throne. Not a super ornate throne, but a simple one. And piled around the base of the throne are toys. Tons of toys, and sitting on the throne is an old, chubby man, but a chubby man with a glint of mischief in his eyes and a familiar smirk, and he wears a robe of red trimmed with white.
"You're welcome here, friends," says the man. "Mobius, you can rest easy."
Mobius is clearly taken aback. "How could you possibly know who I am?"
"Oh, I know everyone," says the man, "except you."
And he points at Loki.
"You seem familiar, but I cannot see into you."
"Not one for introspection, I suppose," says Loki.
"Oh? Ho, ho, ho," says the man. "That's it. That's the explanation. We are the same. I never could spot myself. I'm very good at staying out of sight, you know."
And Loki turns to Mobius and says, "See, I told you." Mobius says, "Knock it off," and turns to the old man. "So you are Loki?" "Loki," says the old man. "Now that's a name I've not heard in a long time. A long time. Yes, I once was Loki, but these days I go by other names. Nicholas, Kringle, Weihnachtsmann." "You are Santa Claus?" asks Loki. "You? There is a timeline in which I am Santa Claus?" And Santa smiles.
"Makes sense, doesn't it?"
And Loki, for once, is at a loss for words.
"Well, you must all be here to prune the timeline," says Santa.
Mobius, once again shocked, says, "That is our assignment."
"And what if I were to tell you this splinter, as you may think of it, exists independently of your sacred timeline?" asks Santa.
And Mobius tilts his head.
"In what way?" he asks. "Well, very much the same way as the TVA, I expect. Look, I stumbled upon this when thousands of years ago I was running away from everything. Everything I had done and everything that had been done to me, and I found this place. The place that stands apart," says Santa.
"Uh-oh," says Loki. "Looks like we're in for some exposition."
And Santa laughs and says, "Well, we're all so good at that. Well, over my time here, I reflected on all that had come before, and I decided that I should balance the scales, as it were, to atone for my mistakes. Not for my sake, but for all the others. And so here we are."
So Mobius looks down at his pad and he taps on. He says, I can't believe it, but it looks like your story checks out. The timeline isn't really connected to anything. I don't understand."
And Santa laughs. "Neither do I. But not everything requires an explanation, I find. And now it's time for your presents."
"Presents?" asks Mobius. "You knew we were coming." And Santa laughs again.
"I know when you are sleeping. I know when you're awake. And I know you've tried to be very good."
And with that, Santa begins to give gifts out to the TVA staff. And while none of the staff fully understands why they receive each individual gift, it turns out the presents are tying back to who each person was before the TVA took them. They might not be able to explain it, but each present has a deep meaning for them. Santa turns to Mobius.
"And here you are."
And he holds up a little key. And Mobius takes it. "So what's this for?" And Santa points, and Mobius turns and says,
"Wow."
And of course, there's a green and gold jet ski on a little trailer.
"It might be a bit of a challenge to find the time to use it," says Santa, "but I couldn't think of a better gift. And as for you," he says while looking at Loki, "I did not know you were coming, could not see you, so I have no gift prepared, but perhaps you would like this."
And Santa reaches down and picks up a box, immaculately wrapped in Christmas paper, and hands it to Loki.
"Truly, we express our deepest gratitude," says Loki.
"Oh, stuff it," says Santa. "Open the box."
And so Loki grins and he tears open the paper and he opens up the box and he stares down into it, again at a loss for words. And then Mobius's tablet blips.
"We have to go," he says to the team. "If we stay much longer, we might alert the rest of the TVA, and I'd rather we just sort of bury this one in paperwork."
And with that, he opens up a portal and the team retreats back as Santa waves. And that evening, in his quarters, Loki pulls out his present. A pair of Funko Pop figurines, one of Loki, one of Thor, and he places them on a shelf in his room. "Merry Christmas," he says. The end.
Oh my goodness. Okay, first of all, I know I said not many Christmas episodes go on my repeat watch, but this is going on my repeat listen. Second of all, absolutely delightful. And second of all, you need to sell this to Disney before they steal it from you. You can make buku bucks.
I mean, like, perfect I would story. Probably make Santa's robe green and gold instead of red and white in that case, but you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, still. No, it was one of those things where, like, I was honestly, Ariel, peek behind the curtain. Like, I was sitting there thinking about what property did I want to mash up with Santa Claus. And I thought of a whole bunch and rejected them one after the other as I was like, no, I can't really think of anything entertaining for that. And then I thought of Loki, and originally it was going to be way more snarky Like, I set out to make a snarky, cynical, sarcastic thing, but as I was writing it, I found, like, I couldn't. The story became what it was. I could not push it in a different way. It would not work that way. And, just kind of as an insight, again, into how sappy I really am.
You know, I loved it. And also, your Mobius. You know, I know that. I'm still so touched by your mashup. Your Mobius impression was fantastic. Spot on, Owen Wilson.
Yes. Yeah, my wow was probably the weakest part of it, oddly enough. Yeah. But all right. Well, enough of that. What property did you choose to mash up with Santa Claus?
So I picked One Punch Man, and it's not nearly as sentimental. I picked it simply because I was like, oh yeah, One Punch Man could accidentally punch through Santa Claus. What would happen? It would become The Santa Claus, the story with Tim Allen where he accidentally kills Santa Claus and then becomes Santa Claus.
I need to know who One Punch Man is, okay. Because like I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with the property.
One Punch Man is a manga and an anime cartoon about this dude who named Saitama, who is so powerful that he can, like, with one punch, he defeats every villain, like just absolutely obliterates them. And that gets really, really boring for him. And so he befriends like this cyborg who's got a vendetta against another cyborg who killed his family named Genos. They join the Heroes Association and fight heroes. And then they fight people from the Monsters Association. It's pretty much that. It's honestly kind of a monster of the week with a dude who can like really punch people. They've made video games about it. So that is One Punch Man in a nutshell. It's actually a really fun anime. I quite enjoy it. So this is the Saitama Claus. Saitama Claus. Yes. And this one does have the Grinch. I promise I wasn't copying you too much, Penny. All right. You all know the story of Saitama Claus, don't you? You don't? Well, then gather round, children, and hear a tale. Once upon a time, in the distant city of Z, there was a guy named Saitama. Saitama had super strength and could defeat his foes with one mighty blow and a jolly ho-ho-ho. The locals, the few that noticed him, called him One Punch Man. But One Punch Man was sad. You see, vanquishing bad guys with one punch, while fun at first, wasn't a challenge for him, and he soon got bored. And along with Saitama's boredom came carelessness. So one fateful snowy December night, One Punch Man was staring listlessly at the night sky. He thought he saw what were northern lights, but the lights started coming closer and closer until One Punch Man found himself face to face with Lord Ouroboros and his dark matter thieves. With a yawn, before the flashing, dazzling Lord could finish delivering his villainous monologue, One Punch Man started carelessly punching and dispatching the gang. As he finished off the lackeys, One Punch Man turned to punch Lord Ouroboros himself. But in his carelessness, he slipped on a patch of ice and not only punched through Lord Ouroboros, but also through Santa, who was coming down to deliver Saitama's gift to him for being such a good hero. Lord Ouroboros and Santa both disappeared in a spectacular, glittering flash of colors. One Punch Man, now sadder than before, went home to sleep knowing he was getting no presents. The next morning when he awoke, he went to put on his normal yellow hero suit and found that it didn't fit. How did he put on so much weight so quickly, he wondered. I mean, he liked food, but he'd never gained that much weight before. Searching through his closet, he found an old red suit larger than his yellow ones. He didn't remember buying it, but he needed to wear something, so he slipped it on and it fit perfectly. And that's when Saitama heard a knock at the door. He opened the door, and there in front of him was a very short cyborg elf. The elf introduced himself as Genos Bells and told Saitama to come with him. They sat down in a sleigh that was out in front, which took to the air and brought them both to the North Pole. Along the way, Saitama asked why the cyborg's name was Genos Bells, and he begrudgingly explained that it's because in the North Pole, where it gets really cold, the cold air makes his robot parts clink together and it sounds like jingle bells. Once they got to the North Pole, Genos Bells explained to Saitama that by defeating the old Santa Claus, he, One Punch Man, automatically became the new Santa Claus. Saitama Claus, if you will. He now had to deliver presents to all the good boys and girls on the supercontinent of Earth. Saitama wasn't pleased about this, but he didn't want to leave the kids of Earth without toys, so he agreed to step up just this once. But first he had to go through training. He learned how to fit down chimneys, how to befriend reindeer, and that you are not supposed to punch naughty children into oblivion. Once he finished his training, it was just in time to start the Christmas Eve toy run. The sleigh ride was chilly, but there was one benefit. Unlimited cookies and cocoa in the sleigh, and Saitama did like his food. No sooner had Saitama Claus delivered his first set of presents and started to climb into the sleigh than they heard a ruckus down below. Gina's Bell's cyborg eyes narrowed as he spied the Garrowinch sneaking in to steal the presents just delivered. The Garrowinch hated everyone, heroes and monsters alike. Gina's Bell's nearly blew his lid as he blamed Garrowinch for killing his Christmas when he was a child. After a massive fight that destroyed half the living room of the house that they had just delivered presents to, Saitama Claus learned that Garrowinch was just stealing toys to give to some children he rescued from the Monster Association, because Garrowinch didn't hate kids. Saitama Claus explained that that's not the way to do things, and they came to a truce, and Saitama Claus offers to give a few extra toys to the Garrowinch's children. The Garrowinch's heart grew three sizes upon that generosity, and he apologized to Gino Spells, and they all worked together to deliver toys. Along the way, they also punched so many bad guys. One Punch Man had no idea so many monsters were trying to stop Christmas. But with the trio of holiday heroes, they defeated every villain and delivered toys in record time. Then, his work over, One Punch Man, Saitama Claus, went to sleep to forget this adventure. But in the morning when he awoke and stepped outside to see what bad guys needed punching, he heard all the kids talking about how Santa got super awesome and saved their toys from being stolen. And Saitama Claus realized that maybe once a year he could be a kiddie hero instead of a punching hero. The Garrowinch would keep tabs on the North Pole the rest of the time. The local children even came up with a song to celebrate this new attitude Santa had on life and to warn the bad guys from stealing their toys. You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not be a really bad guy, or Saitama Claus will come to your town. He sees you when you're sleeping, he knows when you're awake. He'll punch through you if you're really, really bad, so be good for goodness sake. Oh, you better watch out, you better not cry, or Saitama Claus will punch you in the eye. Saitama Claus protects City Z Town. Oh, but look at the time. You kids better get to sleep or Saitama Claus can't deliver your toys. Good night and sweet punching dreams.
I can almost see the Rankin-Bass animated special.
I mean, so not nearly as touching as Loki Claus, but there you have it.
No, it was brilliant. I loved it.
I loved
that for once the person who can sing on the show sang.
I mean, I hope that song's in common.
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. No one's going to be coming making copyright claims to us, I think.
Yes.
Well, those are our, inserting Santa Claus into a geeky property that otherwise would not have Santa Claus entries. But obviously, there are endless opportunities. So if anyone out there has an itching need to write fan fiction in which their favorite geeky property has a visit from Santa Claus, feel free to share it with us. We would love to be able to read it. And as we mentioned in our last segment, the best way to send us the long form content is through email. And the email address for the show is lnc@iheartmedia.com.
Yep, you can also reach out to us on social media. On Twitter, we are LNC_podcast. And on Facebook, we are Large Neutron Collider. We're also Large Neutron Collider on Instagram. We really do love hearing from you. And we're getting better at checking our emails.
Yes. We have started to set up filters to try and make sure that those things jump right up in front of us. So please write in with your suggestions and your mashups and all that kind of stuff. And we hope that you know, this year has obviously been a difficult one. Like, everyone knows that. I don't even know why I bothered saying it, because we all know it. But I'm hoping that you and your loved ones are well. And the next time you hear us will be probably another episode we pre-recorded to lead into the new year. So, but we are hoping that you have a wonderful holiday season, whatever holidays you celebrate, and that you are able to spend time with the people who matter most to you. And yes. That's until next time. I'm Jonathan. His heart grew 3 sizes that day, Strickland.
And I'm Ariel, the tallest elf casting.
The Large Nerdron Collider is a production of iHeartRadio and was created by Ariel Kasten.
Jonathan Strickland is the executive producer. The show is produced, edited, and published by Tari Harrison. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.